Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. That is the goal. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. So, I wanted to share something, a couple of things I want to share. Someone wrote to me and said, this is from Amy. She says, when binge eating has been a way of life for so long, how do you feel your feelings without defaulting to that mode? Feeling a lot of anger. She says she's been running to release some of it, but it's still at a slow boil. She said it's a slow boil, just not at a white heat anymore. She says, I don't want to take that out on the people in my life, even if they deserve it at times. So how do I effectively deal with it? I've tried the body tension exercise described in the book. She's referring to the progressive muscle relaxation that I recommend in my book, The Binge Cure. She says it does help, but I don't feel like I'm going to be able to stop myself from binging or Hulk smashing in the long run. I hope this makes sense. I call it a crage, crazy plus rage. How do I manage it? Well, the first thing that came to mind was that she was associating anger with being destructive. And the body tension exercise and other types of those things, even she said she was running, things like that, those help with the physical manifestation of anger, the physical sensation of anger, but you still need to put words to that anger. It's not enough to just deal with the physiological result of anger. You've really got to give anger a voice. And I mentioned that to her. This was a conversation we had in my Food for Thought community. If you're not a member of it, please join the Food for Thought community, because I answer questions like these. And so she said she now recognizes why she's angry, but she says, I cannot change the circumstances that cause me to feel the anger. I wish I could change my response to the circumstance, but I guess if I stop binging, that's stopping my self-destructive response. I'm trying to channel into something not destructive, like running and walking the dog. I don't know what else to do. I journal my feelings. Okay, so again, she's talking about the experience, the physical experience of anger, just trying to get rid of it by running or walking the dog. Journaling is good, but you have to do more than just recognize why you're upset. You have to express that you're upset. And she also mentioned she cannot change the circumstances. This is a question I get a lot. Why feel a feeling if it doesn't change the circumstance? Well, we don't experience feelings to change the circumstance of what's going on, that the circumstance that's making us feel something. We feel our feelings to change the way we feel about that circumstance. And again, my sort of grim analogy, but it's the best one I have, is when someone passes away, we don't feel our feelings so that we can bring that person back to life. But there is nothing we can do to change the circumstances. But we feel our feelings to change the way we feel about our loss. Not that we completely feel fine about it, but we can feel better. And then we can hold the person's memory, hold our positive feelings and our love for that person, rather than be in pain. That's why we feel our feelings. That's why we mourn. That's why we grieve. That's why we express anger. That's why we feel to heal. So I told her that running and walking the dog is good, but it is not a way of expressing emotions. It's not enough to speak the words or even write the words. You have to write them with feeling. A lot of times people confuse identifying their emotions with expressing them. It's one thing to say, again, well, I realize I'm very angry. I'm very angry about this, 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 and this. But actually saying, and I'm just so pissed. Right? One way is in your head. It's like thinking your anger. You can't think away your feelings.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
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 Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Christina. I called last week.
Hi, Christina. Of course I remember you. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much. I loved your preamble and the feel to heal. And I'm calling not about what I ate or food, but I have one. There's a lot of things I'm dealing with in my life right now, but there's a biggie where I would love either encouragement or support or advice, and just to tell you where I'm at with that, if I could do that.
Of course.
Thank you. So it goes back to the mother. I'll try to be in a nutshell. I did read the book a while back, Mothers Who Can't Love. And I just wanted to say, I was one of those people when I started therapy years ago, where if you asked me about my family, I would say, and I truly believed, I came from a perfect, normal, functional, great, supportive, loving family. So that is quite an extreme to say that. And then throughout the process, again, because I developed bulimia and had issues with body image and all that for many years, bulimia is so strange of a behavior. It's so obvious. I'm like, this is really bad and abnormal and unhealthy, and I need to do something about it. So I started uncovering a lot of things, a lot of which I suppressed. Long story short, I thought this book was very eye-opening, because I started reading it and thinking, oh my gosh, this is my family, or this is my mother. And then uncovering a lot of things, and even recently, like from sexual abuse that was even known by my parents and nothing was done, to, you know, physical and verbal and, you know, a lot of things that I really just set aside, or I really blamed myself for to this day. I mean, I'm still starting the process of working through it. Some things are newer than others. So in the book, there were three options. Yes, go ahead.
Can I just say one thing? It is very common for people to turn against themselves rather than allow themselves. You're a child, right? You're a child. And for a child to say, wow, I'm in this circumstance with these parents who are not taking care of me. They're not protecting me. In fact, they may even be abusing me. And that is just, it's like emotional death for a child to come to terms with that. However, The strategy kids use is then to say, wait a minute, hope. There's hope. It must be me. If I can just change myself, then I'm going to change how they are to me. On some level, kids do this, you know, to some extent or another. And so when you say you started hating yourself, well, that's what's going on. It was a strategy to try to bring hope into your life that ended up, you know, causing you to just have this awful relationship with yourself, which then leads to eating disorders and attack on the body and attack on the self, mm-hmm. and all of that. Yeah.
You nailed it 100%. And I need to keep hearing these things. The repetition is so helpful, because I've had these certain thoughts and values in my head for almost 50 years. So hopefully it won't take 50 years to undo it. I know it won't take that long, but sometimes it feels that way. But in the book, I mean, the bottom line is, and my husband is with me, you know, there's a lot of gaslighting in my family, meaning, you know, they'll say, what, that didn't happen. But my husband was actually witness to certain things that have happened that were pretty big things. And I had no idea that I was the black sheep of the family until almost six. Like, I didn't know. I mean, and it's true. I think back, I'm like, oh, my brother was the golden boy. And just a lot of really negative things. And every time I would contact them, it would be just backlash and negative things, sides, just really gnarly, nasty little remarks kind of thing, in addition to all the big things, which were ignored and just suppressed by them.
So I just want to interject something else, which is,
you said
you were the black sheep of the family, and often the black sheep of the family is the holder of the uncomfortable truth. The person who knows the truth is the person that no one wants to hear from.
And I haven't thought of it that way. And I think very differently from the rest of the family, like very differently. And I'm not talking just politically. I mean, I'm talking about in terms of family dynamics. And the more I would come out and talk about it, the more they would resist, you know, that whole kind of tug, pull and tug. So what's happened was I tried really hard, and my husband worked with me to, after my dad passed, to help my mom. And we would literally fly out there to help her, and he would take off work. And, you know, she lives on the East Coast, so it wasn't like an easy kind of thing. And then just got continued, you know, nothing was ever good enough kind of thing. So we tried, I tried to sort of cultivate the relationship, sort of, you know, I really tried hard on that. I tried a tea party relationship, which is just sort of formalities, except the problem is that the verbal abuse and such still kept coming in. Bottom line is I don't have a relationship with her now. I mean, I initiated and cut off the communication. I will say, a lot of it is huge relief. Like, I have never taken care of myself more in the past year and a half and spoken better to myself, because I'm not on the phone hearing all kinds of slams about myself all the time. But, you know, it's that societal pressure of, oh, shit, you know, you're the kid. You need to do whatever your parents tell you, especially after the loss of my dad. I'm still beating myself up some. There's a lot of relief. So I'm just in this little, like, I wish it didn't come to this. But, yeah.
Another thing, you may have cut off your relationship with your mother, but there are two mothers. You started out by saying it goes back to the mother. And it reminds me of the oldest psychoanalytic joke in the world, which is, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. So, which is really not fair to mothers, because it's also about the father. However, there are two mothers. There is the mother who attacked you and verbally attacked you and got you to take care of her, it sounds like, without taking care of you. There's that actual mother who lives on the East Coast. And then there's the part of you that took in that mother into your own mind, the part of you that might have been attacking yourself with the words of your mother. And so it's really important to recognize when you start having those, what you called negative thoughts about you, whose voice is that? Is that you, or is that a learned voice? Is that something that was said to you?
It's 100% learned, because I used those phrases and they were learned and they were, you know, said in the home for years and years and years. And I know I don't talk to I don't feel that that's my true self whatsoever, because I don't even use some of those words, like idiot, moron, stupid, fat, this, you know what I'm saying?
All the words in my word diet, in my book, I challenge people to go on a word diet. Like, yes, I'm anti-diet, but this is a diet you can go on.
Yay!
And those are some of the words. And people have said, wow, I didn't even realize how much I said those things to myself until I was aware of what I was saying. And so, yes, those are her words that were said to you that you now say to you. So when I say there are two mothers, yes, there's the mother that you've cut off from who lives in the East Coast. And now you have to recognize when she shows up in your own mind in the way that you relate to yourself. And the more that you can think of those types of things as not you, it's like, no, that's not me. That's my mother. I want to call myself an idiot. Nope, that's not me. That's her. The more that you can challenge that, the nicer you're going to be to yourself, and the more and more muted her voice in your mind will be.
Yes. And that's where I feel I have been making, and I remember, you know, that is such an important thing that you teach to people, and that was so revealing, you know, when I first heard about that. And, you know, it's definitely taking time. I see improvement for sure. And I think, like I said, what I'm just dealing with now is still some guilt over, it's, you know, it was the most extreme measure to take. I don't know if I should be looking at it like, I don't know if this will be forever or, you know, just it's a day at a time kind of thing. But, and you know, my husband is super supportive. He's like, I can understand. He sat in on the conversations where my mom was going off on certain things or on myself or whatever the case may be. And because I would always turn it on myself and say, wait, I must have to be misinterpreting this incorrectly. But I am an intelligent woman. So, I don't misinterpret everything.
So as well, I'm glad you recognize. So is your question how to deal with the guilt you feel over cutting off your mother?
Yes. Absolutely. And I, part of me wants to ask, and I don't want to ask, is like, oh my gosh, I mean, was this the right thing to do? I just feel I tried, I exhausted the other few options, but I'm sort of looking for reassurance, but I don't even like would expect you to understand. I mean, I know you understand, but I'm just like, you're a mom. I can't imagine, you know, it's like, I just feel like I'm in between a rock and a hard place, and I'm still anxious over, you know, how this all went down and is going down. Does that make sense?
Yes. So first of all, I think it is helpful to think, and you even alluded to this, about, you know, what is right is what is right for you right now. You don't have to make a decision forever. I mean, some people have such egregious situations with their parents or brothers or sisters or other members of their family that they do choose to cut off from them forever because that is the only way that they can protect themselves. Right. But you don't have to make that decision. You can just say, what is right for you right now? And let what is right for you be the thing that guides your decision rather than what your mom wants.
Or society. I know.
Well, and society doesn't understand what it's like to have a parent who is abusive to you emotionally and it sounds like verbally abusive.
Right.
So society thinks that mothers are all, you know, sweet, sweet, loving parents who, you know, bake cookies. And I don't know what society thinks of, some kind of nonsense, right? And they're home when you get home from school and they're sweet to you and they're loving and they're just some kind of 1950s sitcom mom that probably never existed. So but society is not living your life. And it sounds as if you're feeling guilty for protecting yourself right now. So we feel guilty when we're not doing something we think we should do, or when we're doing something we think we shouldn't do. So I would ask you, what is your crime? What is the bad thing that you're doing or not doing that's causing this guilt? What are the shoulds?
Well, I'd always been trained and ingrained that, you know, to be the dutiful, perfect, attractive, successful, financially, I mean, the laundry list expected of me was extensive. And I feel my entire life has been geared towards meeting the expectations of the family, period. And I feel I'm falling short of that. I feel I've excelled in frickin' every area. And then it's like, I have this monkey on my back.
Okay. So what you're saying is the expectation was make your parents proud by being successful, attractive, doing your best, reaching great heights.
Thin.
thin, successful, right school, right job, right this, right that. And what you're saying is that's conditional love that you felt, that to be accepted, you had to meet the conditions in which they would bestow acceptance upon you, which is that you would reflect them well.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And I did, and it was, it's always, I haven't, it's always been a conditional love, which is what's so interesting with my husband, where it's the opposite. It's 100% unconditional. It's like night and day.
So you, if you have a conditional relationship with a parent who also verbally abuses you, I mean, and calls you names, did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think we need to get into it, but there were some, one thing that sticks out, this is the side, this isn't one of the worst, but me and my husband were together, and she's like, you know, Christina, if you die, your husband will have no trouble finding another woman. And I'm like, that is such a random, this was after my dad. And I mean, I know that that's not, but it's messed up. Like, I don't say that to my friends. I would never say that to Warren, my husband. It's just like, what the heck? Where is this? I mean, I guess, should I be laughing or crying? I don't even know anymore. I'm so confused.
There's no should. So it sounds like because you grew up with these expectations and putting a mask on and being picture perfect and acting picture perfect, you might have lost touch with you. What is it that you want? What is it that you think? What is it that you feel? And this is a time, however long it lasts, where you're not having the influence of a mom who just really is upsetting to you. This is a time where you get to figure out what you think, what you like and don't like, what you want instead of these shoulds. I had this professor in grad school who used to say, don't should on yourself. And I thought he was the cleverest person on earth. And then I found out it was another really old joke. But don't should on yourself. Instead of how should I feel? You ask yourself, well, how do I feel? With, you know, not from, well, what should I feel? Because what about her? How might she feel about it? But what do I feel? What do I want? And that might be, I do want to talk to her and have a tea party relationship with her. It might be, you know what? No, I don't want that. At least I don't want that today. That might change. But right now, no, I don't want to pretend. And let that be your guide.
And it's no coincidence you mentioned, like, to try to figure out my own thing as opposed to just going through a checklist of life, which it started when my husband and I moved out here to California away from all of that. Like, that's really when the process started of my, wait a minute. And that's when she, you know, was like, you went out to L.A. and got all these fancy new ideas in your head. I'm like, oh, crap. And again, I don't know. We've talked about laughing and not, I don't even know if it was I'm confused on that. And that goes to show, like, I have a long way to go in terms of acknowledging feelings and feeling them. I see what you're saying. Was that appropriate to laugh at? I guess not. This is a really heavy, painful topic.
Yes. And I'm glad you just caught yourself because you said something painful and then you laughed. And then you remembered what I said to you about laughing. When you laugh, when you say something, as you put it, heavy, interesting way to put it. When you say something, it's painful and upsetting, and then you laugh, it's a way of not letting yourself feel the true impact of what you are thinking. And it's a way of cutting yourself off from something that is painful or upsetting or both. So,
and I mimic how I was brought up because I was always told, don't feel sad. Don't be mad. That's unattractive. Like, it was evidently emotions were equated with unattractiveness. And since attractiveness and thinness was like a big value of my parents, I am learning where this is all stemming from. And like you said, that wasn't me. That was them. And who am I? I don't know. Maybe I can figure it out in the next 20 years.
And that, well, it will not take you 20 years to figure out who you are.
All right. Good.
The important thing is to stay curious and not critical. Yeah. Because when you're critical of yourself, you just make yourself feel bad. When you're curious, what do I feel? What do I want? Why am I reacting to that? What's this all about? Right. Or then you are more likely to find answers. So Christina, I am so glad you called back. Yeah, please let me know how you're doing. And you're already, even in a week, you just caught yourself laughing. That's big. So now catch when you hear your mother's voice in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will work on, challenge accepted.
Okay. So, challenge accepted.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Nina. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and I will continue listening to your show. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina. Bye for now.
Bye.
So Modern Word Zen has sent something on Instagram. The quarantine has made me feel and look fat. Well, fat is not a feeling. And sometimes when we have big feelings, big thoughts, as Christina sort of alluded to, heavy thoughts, upsetting, unbearable, awful thoughts and feelings. Instead of allowing ourselves to express them or to even know them or to even think about them, it gets converted into, oh, big me. Instead of, oh, I'm filled with these big feelings, I feel fat. So I feel fat is a code expression for something. If you weren't feeling fat, what would you be feeling? What would be on your mind? That is my challenge. Modern Word Zen, if you want to write in your answer to that, I'm happy to share. Anyone else who would like to call, the number is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Love to hear what's on your mind. And I also want to share something that someone wrote in one of my groups on Facebook. And she said that she was really struggling. She said she was an emotional wreck. She told her husband she'd rather be dead than alive because of all the emotional pain she was in. That's how bad it was. And she feels so alone. She said, I just want the roller coaster that has been going constantly my whole life to break down and stop. I would love to just feel happiness and be at peace, but instead I'm full of anger, sadness, and ideas of ending my life just to make me feel better. Am I alone feeling like this? Because it sure feels like it, she said. Well, turns out she was not alone, not at all. She also apologized for offloading, is what she put it. I call it sharing. Sharing is... Oh, I have a caller.
Hello?
Ronan? I think I had a caller who's not there anymore. Hello, can you hear me, caller? Ronan, I don't hear the caller. All right. I'm gonna keep going. Ronan is gonna tell me something. Okay. I'll let you know. Okay. I guess we lost her and we're going to try to, we'll try to get her back. So she was not alone. A lot of people.
Hello?
Break it.
Hello?
Get it.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Carly Gash.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you? Good to see you. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. How are you doing?
I am doing just okay, like more or less. So I wanted to share today with you. So I just talked to my friend who has a kid with cancer.
Yes.
Cancer. It has nothing to do with eating right now, because these 2 days I was not eating because I like blew up my budget. Like a day ago. So I was like, and I noticed that I think better when I don't eat much. So, but I was talking to my friend and she called right. That was so interesting. She called right at 10 a.m. right now when I was like about to listen to your show. And it's very important for me to listen to your show. It just keeps me up and helps me so much, like in the middle of the week until I get to my sessions later in the week, like therapy sessions. So, and I was like, I picked it up and I was, shit, that's like 10 a.m. I need to be like listening to my radio show. But then she called and she was crying because, you know, it's hard when kid has a cancer and they moved from Russia to Israel and paid a lot of money to treat the kid. So, and something happened. She had a very bad day and she was like crying and telling me this stuff like emotionally. And I was like, it was such a dilemma. I like, I need to support her right now because she supported me in my day, bad day. But at the same time, like, I need to take care of myself. I need to listen to the Nina's show. And here I was like, not knowing what to do, because I wanted to call you as well. And I was like, what's going on? And I couldn't say, you know what, I need to go now. And I had like, I'm at work now. I wanted to invent something like, I need to go because of my work. And didn't tell her, like, I need to take care of myself. I was ashamed to say that. And then I was like, oh, it's going to take 1 hour. Usually we talk like 2-3 hours. And then, oh, my God, I'm missing the show. And I was like, okay, I can listen to podcasts. Like, podcast is not the same. I want to call and, like, share. And then halfway through, like, after 28 minutes of talking and 28 minutes of your show, she says, oh, darling, I'm so sorry. The doctor, and I was sharing my part, like I was soothing her at the same time I was sharing my heart part. And when I was sharing my heart part, she said, oh, I'm so sorry. The doctor came. I'm so sorry to like interrupt you at this like vulnerable part. I have to go because the doctor came. And I said, of course, go, go, go. And she hung up. And I'm like, here we go. When I'm supporting a friend, I understand the doctor is important, but like, she has this mechanism of putting herself and her kid first. I don't. So I don't have like very high emotions about it, but I want to acknowledge the situation.
But you had the thought. Well, first of all, I think it's significant that you had the thought of, oh, I'm in conflict. A part of me wants to listen to Dr. Nina's show, and a part of me feels obligated to talk to my friend. That you mm-hmm. noticed your conflict is good, because that helped. Then you can start saying, well, why did I automatically think that I had to talk to her instead of saying, hey, let me call you back in an hour. And so it's good that you recognized how you were caught in this moment and that you automatically chose your friend rather than choosing you or coming to some, it wasn't even a matter of choosing. It's a matter of saying, hey, I want to talk to you, but how about we talk in an hour? What comes up when you think about saying something like that in your mind? What are you doing to the other person?
Thank you so much. I thought about it while talking to her, and usually like I get angry when I'm in this conflict and like, oh fuck, here she goes. Like, it's my best friend. I love her like to pieces, but like, here she goes. She's going to complain. I understand the cancer, but fuck, she's married to a rich man and she's living a good life. All this stuff, you know, and I'm struggling here by myself in America, all this thoughts came. And then instead of like being angry and just being there so I can like feel my friend duty and like say, oh darling, you know, here is the soothing part of me for you. And bye, you know, or, instead of boiling in the anger, I was like, no, I was not even saying no, I was present. I said, like, an option to being there artificially was not an option for me. So I was like, I will be there. I wanted to be there for her, like, you know, mindfully and fully present and really supporting. And instead of like my old mechanism support, like, which I took from my family or I don't know, whatever in my past life, which isn't effective, was like, you know what, do this, do that, do this, do that. You need to like fix the problem. Like do this treatment, do this article, do this exercise. Instead of that, I was remembering you, how you support me, you know, in like groups and everything. And I remember your supportive tone. And I was like stopping myself, pausing. Listening to her, listening to other people is very hard for me. I have ADHD. My thoughts run further than me, my thinking. And I was listening and supporting. at the same time acknowledging this process is going on with me, that yes, I am conflicted, yes, I want to be there, and at the same time I want to support her. So in the middle I was like okay with it, and then when I picked up the phone, I thought in the middle of conversation why I picked up phone, although I was waiting for your phone show, and I have tons of reminders for your show. And then I was like, I feel so lonely, I feel so abandoned, and she is my only person who loves me for who I am and who knows me. And I feel obligated if I don't. First of all, I was even happy that someone called me, because she just started calling me.
Carly Gash, recently. Wait, I just have to challenge you on something. You just said this is the only person who knows you and accepts you, and therefore that's why you felt so obligated to talk to her on her terms. Right? You said that like it's the absolute total truth. But is it? Is she really the only person who knows you? Maybe she's the only person you have a lot of history with. But is she the only person who knows you and accepts you?
No. But she's the one who knows me to like, we've been knowing each other since 13. We're from the same town.
Yes.
I guess she understands me like deeply, you know, like because she's pretty much been through the same shit of my town.
So if you just said, hey, let me talk to you in an hour, what do you think would have happened? Like what stopped you from
in
that?
In my country, the culture is you never abandon anyone in that situation. Like you always come and help. Like it's just but so.
Were you abandoning? Would you have been abandoning her though? Like, if you said, I can understand abandoning her if you said, I can't talk right now, I'll catch you later. But if you said, look, so I'm right in the middle of something or about to do something, let me call you in an hour. Is that abandoning her?
You know what? I'm just thinking right now, the whole dynamic of our relationship. I was always kind of helper there when in her very bad, like, situations. I was the one who encourages through this and like really, really fixes her. And now I'm thinking it goes back to fixing my mom. Like, but not emotionally. My mom is a handicap, so I was always there fixing everything since the day I was born, like fixing my life, fixing everyone else's life. And I noticed it at my work as well, where I tried to fix a lot for this family, but you know what? They were kind of fine. I think it goes back to this mechanism where I'm eagerly fixing others, prioritizing them. Oh my God, they're feeling so bad. I need to help them. But wait a second, who's going to help me, Carly Gash, where like the barn is burning, like it's really burning when it's so hard to move through the day for me.
I want to just acknowledge you for recognizing that connection between feeling this obligation to help your mother and feeling this obligation to help your friend. And if you didn't help your mother, things would probably not have gone well. And so that gets transferred onto your expectation with the friend.
I also have this connection, which just came to my mind. So, you know, before maybe I could do it, before her kid was diagnosed with cancer. You know, for me, like my mom has like condition where she's handicapped. When I was 11, she was diagnosed. And so she's pretty much handicapped her whole life. Like she's a person with special needs. That's what people say in America. But in my country, people treat such people like real handicaps. They have no future, no full life, everything. So I feel like I was, like for mom when it comes, and also she's a person who has her ineffective like behavioral patterns with me, you know. I guess I give a discount for people when they have something serious with their health going on, like handicapped mom, or now my friend who has like okay life. Now she has a kid diagnosed with cancer, and that's for me so scary, honestly. Even though she has like money to treat her, I think I like give them like this not discount, but like the fact that they have this hard situation give them permission. I give them permission just to forget about me and put you, them.
Yes, you give them, you give them the right to have greater rights. Yes, you prioritize their needs over yours. And self.
I found the solution.
What's the solution?
So I will keep prioritizing myself, keep acknowledging and noticing the moments like this. And I will keep putting myself first, although putting myself first for me is not an inborn mechanism. I need to work hard for it. Like I like it in America. People here are so independent and mind their own business in majority. I'm not saying like, of course, like the business people are different here though, but in general, like taking care of yourself here is a normal thing. Like when you say, hey, I need to take care of myself, people understand. When in my country you say, hey, I need to take care of myself, they call me selfish. I was called selfish my whole life in my family for just taking care of myself, like going through the day and trying to educate myself, you know?
Carly Gash, here's the difference between self-care, selfishness, and selflessness. Selfless is, it's all about you. I don't matter. I'm selfless. I'll take care of you, but not myself. Selfish is, it's all about me and not about you, right? That's selfish. Self-care is in the middle, which is, you know what? Sometimes I'm going to take care of you and sometimes I'm going to take care of me, depending on the situation. And I really applaud your wish to do that. Modern Words In on Instagram is saying, I think it's always fair to take care of oneself. You have to take care of yourself. That doesn't make you selfish. Sometimes you do give up, depending on the situation, you give up you to take care of someone else, but not always. Sometimes you do what's best for you and the other person can wait an hour or so. So I love your commitment to self-care. Please call me back next week and let me know how it goes. You deserve
Thank you so much. And there are not enough words to thank you. I'm so grateful to you, Dr. Nina. You really changed my life. Like the way the change is hard to bring. Like it's very hard. It's a very hard job. And all of us think that it comes like somehow when we see it in other people. No, it's like legit hard work. Like just the way we're going to offices or whatever to work. It's just, you know, and the way you do it, it's like really working way. It's a real, it's the way which works. I will sell you some online program for $300 and you will be miraculously happy and successful. Oh, hell no. It's like a lot of work and your way is a working way. And I'm so grateful for you, to you, and that you're doing this for people. And you are so generous with sharing it, like, and really, really pricing it really reasonably, you know, like really helping. It's like pure help. Thank you so, so much.
Well, thank you for that, Carly Gash. You made me feel really good. I appreciate that.
Aww.
Take good care of you. Thank you, Carly Gash. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day for everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, I think we have one more caller. We only have about six more minutes, but caller, are you there? Hello?
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 Oh, I can hear the radio show in the background, so there might be a little bit of a delay. Can you turn
it? I just cut it off.
Okay. No worries. Is this Jenny?
This is Jenny. Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi. There's been a little issue. I couldn't hear like anything Carly was saying. So I'm sure you helped her very well, but I couldn't hear her issue. And I love to hear her. That was a bummer.
You couldn't hear her on the listening on the
It was like breaking up on the radio.
Oh.
On my computer.
Oh, okay.
And I know it's like almost time to end the show. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. I just, you know, wanted a call and, you know.
Ronan says I can go over time if I want to. So
What's on your mind, Jenny? Thanks, Ronan.
Thank you, Ronan. Appreciate it. I'm so disheartened this week because everything is opening up again, and not because everything's opening up again, but because it's opening up again so rapidly, and I feel like everyone around me, and I'm in Los Angeles, so everyone around me is just back to normal. You know, on the streets and shopping and, you know, I get in my car and everyone's honking their horns and speeding around. And it just seems like nobody, everything's back to normal. Like nothing ever happens. Like we didn't just have a pandemic and a stay at home order and all these people died. And it's like nothing changed.
And are dying.
Yeah. It's like nothing changed. And everyone is just like, oh, the malls are back open now, so I can go back to being the asshole I was before this all happened. Like, there was no major shift in the energy of the people that are surrounding me in this city. And it makes me very sad because I feel like I have gone through such a huge change that I can't believe that other people are not, you know, changed by this situation and are just all back to normal. No, and by normal I mean the bad side of normal.
The bad normal. You
know, rushing around to work and getting irritated at each other, and you know, being entitled.
So it sounds like it went from the at least the, what was being proposed, which was we're all in this together, and this sense of unity that we're all in this together. We all are feeling the feeling of being at home, disconnected from other people, all of what we went through during quarantine, during the stay at home order, for you, you really went through something and as we were going through it, the idea was, well, everyone is going through this. Everyone is going through this in a sense of unity and togetherness. And it seemed to be bringing out for the good in a lot of people. And now that things are opened up, it's like it never happened, and everyone, it's no longer the sense of unity and we're all in it together. It's the sense of honk, honk, you didn't go fast enough or whatever. It's just back to life as normal. And it sounds like you're very disenchanted and disappointed in humanity, I guess.
Yeah, completely. It makes me want to like quarantine myself again, just so I don't have to be around these people. And it makes me want to cry sometimes too, actually. I'm so disheartened by the whole situation. And I never thought I'd feel worse than I did when this all first began. And I feel worse now, with humanity in general.
Well, this has definitely brought out the worst in humanity as well as the best. You know, I think that initially being quarantined gave us, as I said, that sense of unity, and people were doing things like organizing Zoom calls or doing neighborhood stuff. Or I get the Sunday New York Times, so I was always reading about these cool neighborhood things that were going on. Or people were in Italy were singing to the medical workers when they left at 7, and you know, there was this this sense of collective support.
Yeah.
And now, instead of this sense of being in we're in a collective, it's every person for themselves. That's what it sounds like you're experiencing.
That's what it seems like is happening, and it makes me want to hide. And you know, with my anxiety and panic, you know, my therapist tells me not to self-isolate, to, you know, make sure I'm really keeping in contact with family and friends, and I don't feel alone. But I want to be alone because I hate everybody. I mean, not my family and friends, you know, just humans around me.
Right.
And I think this is a time where you have to think about, we tend to find the evidence that we look for. So I am not suggesting in any way that you disregard the jerks out there that are just, you know, acting every man for himself and getting upset about wearing masks. And, you know, some women had an utter meltdown in Trader Joe's earlier this week and threw her shopping cart and stormed out and screaming just because she was asked to wear a mask. You know, that yes, those people are there, and it is frustrating. It is bewildering. It is upsetting. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there are also out there people who are still having a sense of being in a collective, still thinking about the other people who took to the streets to protest police brutality, people who are thinking about other people other than themselves. Both are out there. Yes, it's not, I'm not saying don't look at the ones who are nasty and only look at the ones who are nice. Say, yeah, those people are nasty and I have feelings about it. And thankfully, there are also those nice people out there, so that you have a sense of balance in your experience of the world, which can be hard at times.
Yeah, very hard, very hard. It's very emotional walking and driving around now that everything's open compared to, you know, the last 3 or so months of, you know, the stay at home order. It's so different. It's just like it went from like two extremes.
Yeah, it's like some people did not learn a lesson from the quarantine, or did not kind of learn to slow down or think about what's important, or sort of rediscover new values, as many of us have. That those people are not visible right now.
That's definitely. And I have issues with control in general, and that I can't control any of these things or these people. So I do tend to like have mini anxiety attacks and then decide I just want to be alone, because, you know, I get so frustrated.
Yeah. And so for you, being isolated, which may create anxiety, is your way of protecting yourself from being out there and seeing these people and just, you know, having a teeth gnashingly awful reaction to them, which I understand, by the way.
Completely.
So it's to be able, so the thing that you're doing to protect yourself, which is to isolate, is also the thing that causes anxiety as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, perhaps if the world is not such an utter like disaster to you, and you could see the good as well as the bad, again, I cannot stress enough, I am not suggesting that you just look on the bright side, right? Or look at what's good. No, that doesn't work. To be able to say, ugh, this is horrible. These people are nasty. These people are back to their like everything's in a hurry, not thinking about other people, acting as if everything is normal again, and it's not. They're annoying. They're frustrating. It's upsetting. Yes, and also other things like all the homeless people and all. I mean, there's a lot in our society right now that is quite upsetting, and then there are people who are, you know, doing things for other people, who are thinking about other people, who are just changed by the experience as you are. So it's to be able to balance both. Balance is always the key.
Balance. I know. I have a hard time. I really, really enjoy finding balance, but it's very hard sometimes.
It is hard, but practice makes progress.
Practice makes progress. That's good. Yeah. Very true.
Well, Jenny, I'm.
you're very welcome. And I'm sorry that you've been having such a negative experience of the world. And I'm with you. I can understand it. It's very disappointing. And there are other people who are making a difference and a little bit gentler and a little bit nicer because of what they've just been through. Find them.
Well, thank you. I feel better getting it off my chest anyway.
I'm very glad that you did.
Okay.
Call back anytime.
I will. I promise. Okay.
Bye for now. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen live at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen later on Apple Podcasts or the LA Talk Radio website or app or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And again, I'm so happy to spend this hour with you. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.